we've learned anything from these past couple of years, my fellow Americans, it's that personal medical freedom and liberty are in crisis. America Out Loud Pulse brings together the top experts in healthcare-related fields to keep you a beat ahead.
Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Harvey Risch, Professor Emeritus of Epidemiology at Yale School of Public Health. Today, we are continuing our weekly series with various interesting and accomplished people. We've usually been talking about science and medicine and COVID topics, but that's really only a starting point of possible things that we could discuss. And if listeners have questions for me, please submit them at americaoutloud.news/pulse, P-U-L-S-E. I'm very pleased to introduce today's guest, Ms. Diane Cutler. Ms. Cutler recently left her more than 20-year public service career as a federal investigator and is now a private consultant with unique expertise in federal government oversight, research security, and healthcare public policy. Diane was a sworn federal law enforcement officer for the U.S. Department of HHS, Office of Inspector General. Her investigative work into healthcare and grant fraud resulted in numerous criminal convictions and recoveries of more than $700 million. As a supervisory special agent, she was appointed as the first agency National Strike Force Coordinator to create programs and policies that are still successful. And by the end of 2023, the strike force teams have charged over 5,000 defendants who collectively billed federal healthcare programs and private insurers more than $24 billion. This is just amazing. Diane also worked as an investigator in both chambers of Congress during the pandemic, where she witnessed events unfold in real time. She was a professional staff member on the U.S. House Energy and Commerce Committee, and then worked as the chief investigator for health policy in the Senate, where she led the investigation into the outbreak origins and information censorship. So that's quite a career, Diane. Why don't we begin? What have you been thinking about lately?
Thanks for having me, Harvey. You know, what's been on my mind, particularly today, is the Baltimore Bridge collapse and the loss of, you know, the six workers, which is tragic. And, you know, just thinking about their families. And I have to say, with all of the time that I've spent investigating the origins of the, you know, COVID-19 outbreak, it's striking how everyone assumes and knows that a complete and thorough investigation will be conducted into the bridge accident. Just like when the Alaska Airlines, you know, the door blew off, that's being thoroughly investigated and there were no lives lost there. And I've heard it said, and you may have too, that, you know, we lost over 3,000 Americans at 9/11. And it's just, it's disturbing to me that an organized, empowered team has not been convened by the federal government to investigate the COVID origins, where we've lost over 1 million Americans.
So you think that these other investigations are at least so far up and up objective, at least to start with? The NTSB, I've heard claimed, is the most objective of all of the government investigational agencies.
I think I don't know if it's just the transportation difference, you know, from health or what the problem is, just on face value as far as the investigations and the lack of. But, you know, the investigations into the COVID origins was just taboo for so long. And I don't understand it. I certainly have uncovered different motivations, potential motivations for obstructing and not cooperating with the investigation that I've been running. But, you know, the American public and the world deserves to know what happened. I mean, I was working in Congress when the outbreak occurred, and I was able to see the best of the best. I was able to see America come together and the world come together to help. Everyone wanted to help. They were so, people came to Congress and said, look what I invented. Can you use this? I'm not going to charge. I mean, it was, the innovation was truly mind-blowing. It was impressive and constant barrage of questions. Can we meet with you? Can we show this to you? Can you help get this into the supply chain of remedies of different things? And, you know, the American people deserve that effort from their government.
But, you know, we as outsiders to that saw exactly the opposite. We saw Congress, with 21 doctors in Congress, refused to stand up to say anything, that we saw virtually complete control, except for one or two members of the Senate and Congress, of their voices, not to push back onto any of the messaging. And we knew that most of those messaging points were wrong, lies, misrepresentations, distractions, and so on. From the very beginning, essentially, from March of 2020, those of us who had already been working on it and seeing the science and what was happening, mm-hmm. and understood what was going on, we already knew that this is not the truth, that there was being a controlled message at that point. And as in most things, we were all rudely awakened into A, who our friends were, and B, who was standing to, normally once it goes to who is standing to gain from anything. But I think I've come around in thinking about this to who is standing to lose, that there is the people who mounted this whole prejudiced, corrupted response to the pandemic are people who stood to lose huge amounts, not just the people like the pharma companies who stood to gain. And so I'm playing both angles at this point and thinking about it.
No, I understand that. And, you know, I also feel like the clampdown on the truth has robbed the American public of knowing and having the opportunity to learn about Chinese culture. And, you know, because their response was what we've seen their response be in the past, which is to cover up immediately, you know, because in their culture, they don't want to be embarrassed by the outbreak and the sickness. That's part of it. But
Asian cultures don't shun embarrassment at all costs. I agree. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, totalitarian cultures shun embarrassment even more so.
Right.
And we have become a totalitarian culture, and therefore our political domination is shunning. It's all theater, and theater is a cover up for truth.
Well, right. And you know, just to, you know, the American public should be able to learn, and Westerners really should learn more about the culture there, and to understand that, you know, they wouldn't have had, the scientists wouldn't have had a choice in coming forward. We think in America, we think, well, what about whistleblowers? You don't whistleblow in a Chinese communist regime. You know, you can't.
Not if you have any family there.
Right. Not if you have family. Not if you have any pressure points, right? To be able to, where either, you know, your life can be in jeopardy, the person's life or their families, or, I mean, because it's that serious, and that, you know, it's just a completely different culture than what we've been used to pre-COVID. Right. So, anyway, I've been, that's been on my mind a lot. And, you know, for me, what really stood out, you know, you said that the scientists and the doctors knew early on. For me, the real clincher that there was a problem, was April 30th, when the intelligence community, it was April 30th, 2020, when the intelligence community released a statement indicating that they were all on the same page. They had full agreement within the community. I've been working with the intelligence community since 2012, and very closely. And I knew that there's no chance of that happening. Plus, having been an investigator for over 20 years, I know how long it takes to do a thorough, objective, fact-finding investigation. And there was absolutely no chance of that having occurred with a conclusion and a consensus by April 30th. I was shocked at that statement. It was very troubling. And I had started digging into it right away. I already knew about the Wuhan Institute of Virology because I'd been investigating the pharmaceutical supply chain, the integrity of that for our country and everything before COVID. Because I was working at that time with Energy and Commerce. We were holding hearings on it, and the e-cigarettes had become a problem. So we were looking at that and how in California, a lot of them were being adulterated with vitamin E acetate. So when it heated up, it could be ingested into and then became solid in the lungs. And the young people that were becoming addicted to that so quickly ended up having lungs like, you know, very elderly individuals who have COPD, and they can't recover from that. They never will. So we were looking at all of that and, you know, basically the China threat, and then COVID hit. And so I started looking for anything I could find immediately on the Wuhan Institute of Virology and what they were doing. And having my experience with oversight and investigations of HHS programs. Now, keep in mind, HHS is an umbrella for NIH, CDC, FDA, CMS, which is Centers for Medicare and Medicaid. So it's huge. It's one of the largest, it's the largest agency in the federal government, at least it was before COVID. I mean, now with all the money, I don't know. It may have some competition with DOD, but it was certainly the largest grant maker in the federal government with a trillion in outlays every year. Massive. Yeah, oh yeah. So I've had a lot of experience looking at that. So I know what is supposed to be and required to be in grant research grant records. So I started looking for the records to see what I could find. And I couldn't find any evidence of the Wuhan Institute of Virology, which was odd to me because I know that China had been cooperating with specifically with NIH for some time. Well, it turns out that in July of 2020, we saw some correspondence from NIH and learned that, you know, definitely that there had been a subcontract by
EcoHealth. Right, a pass-through, right.
With.
Yeah.
And we met with NIH, the committee did, and talked to them about it. They asked Peter Daszak and EcoHealth Alliance to basically follow the law that they had to follow and that they knew they had to follow, and I can talk about that, and publicly report that subgrant. And I know how to read the data, and I could tell it was just 7 days later, it was input. So, and for all of the years of the grant started in 2014, the primary grant that everyone talks about, the NIH grant that was funding the coronavirus research that EcoHealth funneled over to the Wuhan.
So I understand that grant was interrupted because the Chinese stopped allowing information from their research to go back to NIH.
Well, I don't know if they ever stopped allowing it. What happened was, so there were two grants simultaneously that EcoHealth was getting, one from USAID and one from NIH. And it was basically for the same thing. EcoHealth told USAID that, well, we'll use your money to go collect viruses to characterize the virus. And then in NIH, we'll use your money to go collect these viruses, which, by the way, were the same viruses, and the same people, the same researchers, come up with, we'll identify the ones that are going to be the most dangerous to people. And, you know, then we'll be prepared to make vaccines, kind of thing. So they're really, I mean, it's really just not different. But the thing is, that sub award couldn't be detected because our grants, our system in the federal government, there's a website called usaspending.gov that is designed to give transparency to how the government spends its money. Because, you know, we're in a republic. Citizens get to know this. You know, they're supposed to know how government's spending money and what records it's collecting. And they have a right to know. We have a right to know. And so, but the problem is the system was designed so that it only captures two tiers of an award in case of a grant, which means, let's say the government gives you a grant, you give a sub grant to me, and I give one to my neighbor. The neighbor isn't going to show up and can't be detected at all. So that's the reason that the Wuhan Institute of Virology didn't show up in that grant either, because the original award, the big award, primary award, went to UC Davis, University of California, Davis, then to EcoHealth, then to the WIP. And by the way, people aren't following up on this, but there's another company called Metabiota, which was also part of that grant, which also gave money to the labs and researchers, not only in Wuhan, but in other areas of China. But we can't see it. So it's really a false sense of security in that system, that system's allowing transparency, because we don't know who the ultimate beneficiaries are of the research that we're paying for, which is quite concerning.
It's true, because there are military applications of this and terrorism applications of all of this, and it's dangerous and requires security control and safety issues and monitoring. In fact, that's why the Diffuse grant never got funded. DOD said it wasn't safe enough. Mm-hmm. So there, all of it is, that information and transparency is absolutely needed.
It is. And I mean, it's also designed to be, that system's designed to be a force multiplier. Because, you know, the government knows that people are interested. And so, you know, like the internet sleuths that we've seen come forward through COVID and carry some of the water with revealing a lot of the truth in records that they've been getting through FOIA. You know, that's what they know, that a system like usaspending.gov is going to be perused by the federal government, I mean, by the American citizens, and that we have a lot of smart people in this country, and that they will find patterns and problems and alert us, or I'm sorry, well, habit of being with the federal government. It's not us, alert the federal government. So, you know, that system needs to be changed.
Oh, I agree. That's when they start using burner phones and burner emails and so on, as they've done.
Well, and I did the math on this, that Peter Daszak and EcoHealth Alliance had received, oh my goodness, it was so, I mean, a lot of awards since the year 2000. But, you know, I say that with caution, because usaspending.gov was implemented in 2010, and then everyone had to be up to speed by 2014, everything had to be input. So anything before that may not be captured in that system, and likely is not. So it's not even true that, you know, the $140 million that I've traced going to EcoHealth Alliance from the federal government, that may or may not be all of the money.
That's true.
And so in looking back at their grants, and I did the calculations for how many grant applications would have been submitted, that were awarded, and I even use the percentage of in the government, how many are submitted, and then how many make it through. It's something like 20%. But anyway, so how many applications, and then the responsibility for two decades of knowing that, first of all, that progress reports had to be completed every year. And then, and certainly by the time usaspending.gov came around, that it was a requirement to report their subawards. And so it really stood out to me in the data that EcoHealth had all of their information submitted into usaspending.gov that showed all of their other subawards and things, except for this one, except for the ones in China. also their tax returns, because it's a nonprofit organization. And so you have to, they file, it's an IRS Form 990, which is supposed to be publicly available. And in analyzing those records, the same thing. It was like, instead of showing details of Wuhan Institute of Virology as a recipient of, you know, this wired amount, it was Southeast Asia.
We have to take a break. So why don't we take a break for a moment? We'll come right back. So everybody, please stay tuned. We'll be back shortly.
Millions of Americans are needlessly suffering from the long-haul effects of the toxic spike protein. Dr. Peter McCullough and his team at The Wellness Company designed their spike support formula to counteract harmful spike protein from COVID-19 and vaccines so you can feel your best. Go to OutLoudCare.com today and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order.
Cholesterol, blood pressure, blood sugar, inflammation, and weight. These are all real-world problems that 87% of Americans are struggling with. Often, there are no symptoms, but left unattended, we become inundated with one health problem after another. It's time to fight back with HealRight. HealRight is a bar that you eat, but it's food as medicine that addresses the nutritional root cause of health issues in just 8 weeks. Developed by world-renowned scientists and backed by 15 years of research, HealRight is effective, but it's also delicious and works without additional diet or lifestyle changes. Step out of the statistics and use food as medicine. Visit healright.com/outloud or americaoutloud.shop and use the code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Welcome back. This is Dr. Harvey Risch with Ms. Diane Cutler. So we were just talking about EcoHealth Alliance and the grant applications that went through there that were evasive about their funding the Wuhan Institute of Virology and the projects, in particular, the one dealing with the gain-of-function experiments on the coronavirus.
That, and too, in the USAID award, the data showed where all the different locations where EcoHealth Alliance was going to be working, except China, instead of the ones that were the line items, right, that should have shown China, they showed New York.
That was the headquarters.
EcoHealth doesn't have, but they don't have a laboratory.
Right.
So again, China was missing from the data.
So what I don't understand about this is that all of the bioweapons people before COVID were proud of their work, were considered themselves to be patriots, thought that they were at the cutting edge of important science, world important science that was going to somehow do good for our country, if not the whole world.
Are you talking about biodefense?
Yes, but I'm calling them bioweapons, because biodefense to me is just 1984 speak for bioweapons.
The technicality is what you're saying there, right? I mean, it's we know that China never discontinued their bioweapons program. I mean, that's been made public. I know the State Department put out a pivotal fact sheet. They called it January 15th, 2021. Right. Yes. Okay. They stated that, you know, that it's known that China has a bioweapons program, and you know that fact sheet has never been retracted.
But I'm not concerned about that these things are being researched. I'm concerned that they are not hermetically sealed off from the planet.
I totally agree. And how can they? But how can they ever be, really?
Well, then that's the answer to why they shouldn't be researched.
Right. I mean, what's the benefit? It's the risk reward. What is the actual reward, and who is making the decision on that?
Right.
There were two pauses for gain of function research. They were both voluntary. One was in 2012. One was in 2014. In 2012, the first voluntary pause took a little bit to get going. It started off with a small group, I think 30 people, 30 doctors or researchers, and then it expanded from there. And that was specific to, that was avian flu, I believe. And then in 2012, it was avian flu and coronaviruses.
2014,
so,
right.
I'm sorry, 2014, thank you.
Right.
Yeah, so there were two different pauses. And it's interesting, the EcoHealth Alliance was awarded in both of those time periods. In 2012, they were awarded a grant by NIH to do avian flu research in China. In 2014, they were awarded a grant to do coronavirus research in China.
So these are new grants that, in theory, as I looked at, for example, the Diffuse grant, the Project Diffuse grant, they kind of whitewashed the gain of function aspect of it. They were a little bit vague and evasive. It's there. It's clear that it's there. And DOD picked up on it and said it was unsafe. But the casual reading wouldn't suggest it, not in bright letters, this is gain of function research that we're doing. And they had to defend it when it came out in the Menagerie papers in 2015 and 16. They said in the acknowledgments that NIH, in spite of the pause, said they could continue doing this work. Mm-hmm. And the person who said they could continue doing this work was presumably the extramural grant administrator, who would have been Eric Stemme.
Okay, yeah.
Because it says right. in Reporter, in NIH yeah. Reporter.
Well, there's a 2016, the records have come out since showing from FOIA lawsuits, I might add, because there's such a clampdown on records coming out of the executive branch. You know, I have to sue the government to get records. I mean, anyway, that's, talk about that later. But yeah, so in 2016, I mean, when you look at the timeline of what happened with EcoHealth Alliance's grant, you can see where they were educated, they learned, and they learned how to pivot. So in 2016, the grant was, the same grant we're talking about, was suspended because their first report, their first progress report on the grant was reviewed by scientists at NIH, and they had questions. They said, EcoHealth, we think this could be gain of function. What say you? And EcoHealth wrote back with so many misrepresentations in their letter. They said things like, well, you know, if anything does, if it is gain of function, if something happens and this pathogen does turn out to be, you know, supercharged or more virulent, we will notify immediately. We will notify UNC. Well, that matters a lot because UNC is actually an NIH biodefense
contractor. Yeah, center.
Yeah, it's a center, and they train others on biodefense. So that carried a lot of weight, but NIH caught it and wrote back and said, don't you mean you'll notify the WIV? Because mm-hmm. that in the hierarchy of the grant and how it was arranged, that was the one that they were supposed to talk to. Right. And so there was, so the WIV should have talked to EcoHealth. EcoHealth should have let NIH know, but, you know, that's just one of the misrepresentations. And what's also interesting is how EcoHealth represented what they basically defined. They said, no, this isn't gain of function, and here's why. And NIH adopted the exact language that EcoHealth used. It's almost as if EcoHealth was educating NIH.
Well, giving them an excuse, a limited hangout or an excuse, you know, to continue doing this, yeah. Where they would, NIH would be getting scrutiny from Congress about something. And, you know, there's certainly been the periodic scrutiny of stupid grants. You know, Congress and the government pays money to do ridiculous grants that nobody's really interested in and have no right. value. So that does happen yeah. on occasion. People want to protect themselves from oversight.
Oh, well, sure. Well, this, and that's what happened. So bottom line is it was only suspended a couple of months, but EcoHealth learned at that point that their progress reports were going to be reviewed, and an action that NIH could and would and did take in 2016 was to suspend all of the research. So fast forward, and they never submitted their, it's called the year five progress report. It was never submitted to NIH.
That's the final progress report of a grant, if it's a five-year grant.
Correct, right. Well, this was going to be in a series of grants. So it was the first 5 years and then the second 5 years. So
you only get 5 years of funding. You have to apply for a renewal and all that business. I've been through all the grants for my whole career, so I know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. So, yeah, but it's called a renewal. So the next year, so what happened was EcoHealth was oddly awarded its renewal without having closed out or submitted the required progress report.
Well, that would be normal because you'd have to apply for the renewal a year or a year and a half early anyway.
Yeah. Okay. But stay with me though, because in 2018, they submitted two of them late. We still don't know what EcoHealth was really doing in 2019 and half of 2018. So, I mean, I can show you my timeline, you know, but it's like clockwork. I mean, you can just see step by step by step how they avoided and EcoHealth knew it was supposed to submit it. They told NIH, "Oh, sorry, we tried, but we had computer problems."
So you never let me off the hook on that one.
Yeah, well, I mean, and somehow everyone was mystified about how this money could have possibly been given to EcoHealth and this new, the renewal awarded without the proper progress reports. And there's allegedly something in NIH system that should alert and say, you know, this is due. Anyway, so it's just, EcoHealth has had an unbelievable amount of, I would say, good luck from NIH that doesn't seem to be standard.
Well, it's hard to know whether this was just, it was being treated as a pet activity of the NIH people who were supervising it, or they were just being lax, you know, and thinking they're probably okay at just not, you know, crossing T's and dotting I's. So we'll eventually get it from them, but we don't want to really disrupt them too much.
Which is why we need an investigation that is not tucked away in the intelligence community. Intelligence community doesn't investigate. You know, they don't go out and investigate crime scenes. They don't collect.
They evidence. Make the crime scenes.
They collect. They collect. They collect intelligence. And then, you know, again, coming from the perspective of a former criminal investigator, my job was, you know, you collect the evidence, you go where the evidence takes you, and it is what it is. You know, you certainly don't interfere in what that evidence is, my goodness. And I'm not saying that the intelligence community does that, but the intelligence community is designed for a different purpose. And here's a key factor too. HHS is not what's called a Title 50 agency, which is all of the intelligence community agencies are Title 50 agencies. They are authorized by Title 50 to be able to be part of the intelligence community. And HHS is not one. So by ordering or requesting that this be an intelligence community investigation, it assured a couple of things. One, everything would be classified, would be tightly controlled, and is much easier to monitor if there would be a leak or breach.
The research in the first place or the investigation afterwards?
The investigation, right? But so there was a 90-day, it was called the 90-day review. It was ordered in May of 20, gosh, these years are all just flowing together now. It was 2022, I think. Yes, 2022. Yeah. So the intelligence community was told, you know, hey, OD&I, Office of Director of National Intelligence, you lead this because you shepherd all of the intelligence community to come up with consensus, which wasn't even necessary. They didn't have to have consensus. They just needed to report out what their findings were.
But DNI was running the pandemic response at the same time. The NSC was running the pandemic response.
Right. Right, the NSC was, yes. Yeah. But if you look at the fact that all of the records with NIH and elsewhere were not, they're not even part of the intelligence community. It just doesn't even make sense. Even if you augment with those records, the intelligence community isn't going to know what they're looking at with those things. I mean, it's very troubling. And also the intelligence community was being advised by Ralph Baric, by Christian Anderson, by Bob Geary, by Peter Daszak. I mean, we know this. We know this. They've admitted it, and we know it. And without, you know, that would be one thing if their conflicts of interest, of finance, you know, their conflicts of financial interest and
well, it's career else. Interest, conflicts of career interest.
Right, in so many ways, right? So many, multiple ways they were conflicted individuals, but those conflicts weren't disclosed.
And that is astonishing to me, because we outsiders knew that these people were all in deep in all of this gain of function research, and somehow the intelligence community couldn't have figured that out.
Right. Well, the intelligence community is supposed to, you know, their primary jurisdiction is foreign. So monitoring the inner workings of the United States is out of their reach.
Well, that's theory. I don't know if that's reality.
Right. I'm just talking about authorities and mission.
Right.
You know, and the primary focus. But it, you know, plausible deniability?
Yes.
It just all needs to be unraveled by serious trained investigators, and I don't mean just scientists. Yes, scientists should be at the table, but you have to have, we need a cadre of people like, you know, like me with the experience that I've had, because we know how to, we've worked with you know, transnational organized criminal syndicates and obstruction of justice and evidence, mm-hmm. right? And that's what we're dealing with.
Yes, absolutely. There needs to be forensic investigators, not just scientific ones. That's right. And criminal ones. That's right.
We need it. We need all at the table. We do. We need those specialties. But I'm just afraid that, you know, if the day does ever come where we do get some kind of empowered commission that has authority to get records and interview witnesses, that that, you know, the criminal investigators will be left out of that, because everyone thinks,
I don't see this ever happening. I mean, it didn't happen in the JFK assassination investigation. That was all public theater to cover it up. And I assume that this is so large on the scale of that it's going, has been and will continue to be the same large scale public theater that's going to cover it up.
I hope not. I'll say this. I had a meeting just yesterday with, it was a first time meeting, and we were talking about, it was a business meeting, and we were talking about backgrounds a little bit, and the individuals at the table wanted to know a little bit about my history, and what were you doing? What were you focused on when you were working in Congress? So they said the COVID origins. The meeting stopped at that point, and this happens to me all the time. They said, really? What can you tell us? I mean, everyone, and the, you know, the general thought is that people in the government don't care anymore about it, and that there's no interest, that there's no appetite for it. And I disagree every time I bring it up. And to either party, it doesn't matter the political affiliation. And I'll tell you, the one thing that we've seen is that, you know, so when I was with Energy and Commerce, I was assigned to the minority, which at that time was the Republican staff. And we tried to work across the aisle to get the Democrats to participate in the investigation. And we were turned down all the time because, you know, this investigation just became such a political hotbed, which was so disappointing to me as a non-political. Mm-hmm.
Let me interrupt. We have to take another break.
Oh, gosh. Okay. Boy, that's fast. Okay.
No, that's the way this goes. All right. So, people, we're taking a break. Please come back. Stay tuned shortly.
Expert opinions, honest debate, and in-depth investigations are what you've come to expect from AmericaOutloud.news. We don't shy away from speaking the truth boldly and plainly. All that's missing is the propaganda that has infected legacy and social media. Get the best of down and dirty, wholesome American speak. Now is our time, my fellow Americans. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Don't accept joint aches and stiffness as part of aging. Doctors at Advanced Nutrition Company, Healthy Cell, created Joint Health and Mobility to support connective tissue, joint lubrication, and reduce joint irritation with curcumin, omega-3, chondroitin, glucosamine, and hyaluronic acid for joint comfort and flexibility. And Healthy Cell's not a pill. It's a gel you swallow. Get 100% drug-free joint support. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. That's HealthyCell.com. Code out loud.
Welcome back. This is Dr. Harvey Risch with Ms. Diane Cutler. So we were just talking about the fact that as much as we all have COVID fatigue and we think everybody else has COVID fatigue, apparently there's still some motivation or curiosity as to what really went on and who was responsible and how we're going to bring it all out into the open and so on. And one of the things I wanted to bring up and point out just as something that I observed in the last couple of days is that the CDC put out some data that proves that the entire COVID management was a failure. That everything that was done, and the reason is that we were constantly told that we had to stop the spread of the infection. From the beginning, all of the management was, including the vaccination, was to stop the spread. Well, CDC has been doing seropositivity studies. They get large numbers of blood samples every 3 months, approximately, and they see how many people have antibodies to the spike protein and how many people have antibodies to the nucleocapsid, which is only on the virus, not in the vaccine. Mm-hmm. And the last one was in the last 3 months of last year, and they just put out the results of that recently. There's no date on it, so they don't quite tell you when they published this, but it was within the last few weeks. And it shows that, according to their sampling, 87% of the country has been infected with COVID. If 87% of the country has had COVID, it means all of the management did nothing to stem the spread because virtually the whole country got COVID anyway. So all of the things, all of the indignities that we went through, all of the lockdowns, all of the separations, the distancing, the closures, the school closures, the business closures, and the vaccines, all that was for naught, according to this.
Yeah, and you know, the World Health Organization encouraged the world to take the lead of China and lock down and do all of that, and CDC had the power and authority to be able to do that as well, to give those instructions. And I know that at the time, I think the president either authorized it or needed to authorize it. Fine. It did happen. But here's what I'm going to say. At the beginning of this, we talked about how HHS is or was the largest agency in the federal government, one budget wise, and 800 something thousand employees. DOD is right there too. DOD has, so every agency has a statutory inspector general. Now, what the inspectors general do in those different agencies can be different. They have the statutory authority, but some will be heavily involved in investigating their own internal personnel in that agency, or heavy with audits. They may or may not have criminal investigators who carry guns and badges. And so they're all different. But I'm just gonna leave you with this for a second here. DOD has their one statutory IG, and they've created additional IGs because they have the authority to do that. The agencies all have the authority to do that. Secretary of the agencies can do this. They can create these inspectors general. So I totaled up how many DOD has. They have 401
fully fledged inspector general offices?
Well, it's under a different authority. Okay, so it's not the statutory IG, but it still has oversight, and there's oversight. There's an oversight responsibility for that IG. For example, there's an IG over Fort Detrick. So even so, it's the force multiplier that helps with oversight in an agency that large.
So that's very low level. I mean, you know, the Department of Justice has an inspector general, and it's supposed to be the backstop against a runaway Department of Justice.
Right. Well, they all have HHS has an inspector general. One.
Yes.
So DOD has 401. HHS has one. And what failed during the pandemic? You got NIH, which does not have its own IG. CDC does not have its own IG. FDA does not have its own IG. So my point is, if you look at the budget for HHS IG, they are budgeted by Congress. 80% of their budget must go to healthcare fraud oversight, or healthcare oversight, rather. And so that's Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, right? And a couple of other things. But that leaves NIH, FDA, Indian Health Service, ORR, which is the Office of Refugee Resettlement, which we see is working on the border. And all of these other, they have 12 operating divisions. So basically 11 operating divisions are supposed to be overseen by an HHS IG with only 20% of that budget dedicated and spread out among all of that.
Sounds thin.
Yes, it does. So, my point is that with CDC being a massive disappointment and putting out directives that are questionable, NIH taking over ASPR's role, and I mean, with all of the mess that we saw with the pandemic response among the HHS agencies, what are we going to do about that? What has changed? That's why we need the investigation, not just so that people can have the answers about what happened, why they lost their loved ones, what was going on. Was it because NIH was offshoring, NIH and USAID was offshoring its risky research to these countries, including China? And it wasn't just China. I mean, I would argue that the whole PREDICT program through USAID, all of these programs, I mean, who actually is looking at the science to see how this is going to benefit the American public?
Right. That's my argument. The 32 bioweapons labs in Ukraine that we were running, or the, you know, or Galveston, or the one in Canada, and was it Edmonton or somewhere up there? And it goes on and on and on, that this risky gain of function research was never properly motivated. It was never properly justified, and is not ever usable as a weapon of war, because it blows back. You cannot protect yourselves. The vaccines will never work well enough against these viruses without causing their own harms. And it's not a moral thing to do when you have other weapons that are much more focal, tactical, and clean as far as our, you know, usage of them elsewhere goes.
Well, and look what happened. I mean, they were present, allegedly, in Wuhan. We had, by the way, NIH personnel stationed in China, CDC personnel stationed in China, FDA personnel stationed in China. And did we ever to this day, we still don't have the virus from China. We have the virus sequence, but not a sample.
Well,
I mean, it's like, why were we there if we don't have, if we really weren't establishing the relationships and able to.
We were there to spy on the Chinese. It's obvious. I mean,
but the fact that we're still conducting, joint research, which really shouldn't be happening, with the Chinese when we haven't even receive the sample? I mean, it's just like, how do we walk away from what happened?
You can't. So I've done research studies in Shanghai way back in the 2000s, early 2000s. I have colleagues there. I have colleagues in the U.S. that have family there. I have interacted with them. I think that many of us at an idealistic scientific level think of the Chinese as partners in scientific research and are in denial about their degree of required participation in military aspect of the country under their totalitarian government. We prefer not to see that. We prefer to see our idealistic thought that they're good, smart, ethical people like us who want to do good science. And so we've done that. And why else would Ralph Baric have trained Wuhan scientists to do his no-see-em lab technique and take it back to China, except that he thought that they were going to do good science, you know, and make a vaccine eventually or something? I don't know.
Well, I'll tell you this. NIH has certainly been a big player in all of this because their grant awards help facilitate the transfer of technology. They have exceptions in their policy that if it's going from a university to a university, and that includes foreign, then you have to share your technology. So I don't think Ralph Baric had a choice, at least with the mice, to share the humanized mice. And it's my understanding, I'm not a scientist, but it's my understanding that those humanized mice were key to being able to do this kind of research.
Yes, to develop the gain of function to make this virus function in humans, not just in bats.
Well, the whole university system is another problem. I mean, I just found the other day, I was reading an article and noticed a .cn email address for the principal investigator, and I started digging into it. And awards from Department of Energy, from Office of Naval Research, from NSF, National Science Foundation, that were funding researchers allegedly at New York State University, but there's a campus in China.
Well, Yale's got partnerships with Shanghai Jiaotong University.
This isn't even what they call the sister labs. This is an actual, it actually has a lab. So does Georgia Tech. They have, they partnered, I'm sorry, with the, I can't pronounce it, is TSINGJIAUN University, but there's an actual New York University campus, and I started looking into the researchers involved in this research, and it's wild stuff. I mean, it's like 3D nano robots for DNA, and I strongly believe that all of those researchers have been doing all of this research in China, and the China campus. Nowhere. Again, this is a transparency issue. Nowhere does it say what the location was where this research was done. I looked at the principal investigator has a full-time job, not only teaching at Fudan University, and there's another university too in China where he's employed, but he's a full-time employee at a bio, at a big pharma manufacturing company that is in the same city where the New York State University is in China.
Well, so it's easy to go into PubMed and look up his publications and see where the publications came out of, where the work came out of from that investigator.
But that's my point. It says New York University.
It says New York University, even though his previous papers are being done in China?
No, it doesn't say that his previous papers are being done in China. I mean, some of them are, but that's common, right? I mean, if you've got a Chinese researcher, they may have published in China before they came to the United States or whatever.
Yes.
There's an entire tranche of records that just say New York State University. It's just unbelievable. But these are things that we can prevent. Like, we can prevent this kind of confusion. We can prevent our money going over to China to develop these, you know, three-dimensional DNA nanorobots that are going to be traveling through the bloodstream in a human. We should keep that technology here.
Well, it's true that when we're on a wartime footing between countries, we have to protect our assets. you know, and the fact that the Chinese are at war with us on under restricted warfare, and we're not recognizing that, is a substantial difference in how we have to protect ourselves that we're not doing.
Yes, and I might say that we are officially recognizing publicly, right? Because we are at war. You're right. I mean, we've been at war. They declared war on us. I mean, gosh, what it was in 2017 when things really kicked into high gear with the military-civilian fusion, where they stepped it up a notch there. And then, you know, they've started cutting off data access, cutting off information access, wiping the internet of their historical research and different things. And you know, I mean, look at fentanyl. They don't have to have a kinetic war. They know how to disrupt us.
They figured out our vulnerabilities and they can exploit them. That's right.
Well, and they certainly have, you know, especially with the media influence is significant. I mean, you know, people wonder about the media. I don't. I know. I just know that we're seeing the success of China's efforts in flooding the United States with the message that they want us to believe. And they are successfully using our media to conceal the truth of in situations like the COVID origins that they don't want us to know about.
So is this top down? Do we have an administration that is totally conflicted because of being threatened with revealing their complicity in extracting money from the Chinese, basically treating this administration?
I mean, I haven't been briefed on that investigation. I haven't been involved in that investigation, so I can't comment on that. But I certainly can say that we do know because of disclosures how much money that China is paying to our media outlets here in the United States. And we know, too, that they sent a lot of their students over here to major in journalism to then be hired into our media. I mean, this is known. We know this. I mean, it's in public records. It's not anything. They've been doing all of this has been happening right in front of us. But we haven't. We as a country haven't. I feel like we don't, as a country, want to believe it. I think there's a certain level of denial that, you know, even in the scientific community, like you said, you know, everybody wants to believe that the scientists are good people, and they probably are, but wow, they are rewarded for plagiarism. They do not understand. They don't, their concept of copying someone else's work is rewarded. It's totally different than how we think about it here. And there are just so many differences like that. I mean, I would encourage everybody to really start learning about, first of all, our history, civics 101 over here, because we need to know where we came from and what, you know, to return to our American values and Christian values. And then, but also to learn about China and how they do operate very differently. They have a different culture.
It's true. That's true. Well, with that, we've actually run out of time. So thank you. I hope everybody's enjoyed our discussion. If you have questions for me, please submit them at americaoutloud.news/pulse. So thank you, Diane. Thank you for some amazing discussions. This has been really informative. I've enjoyed it a lot. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and please come back again next week.